talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta
cut you down. Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. Remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making, and there was a lot of it made. A lot of it made. I'm going to go to the January 6th commission right now. You know, we saw their deliberations over many, many different hearings. We listened to a lot of great witnesses, very interesting. But the one thing that the average person, including me, didn't see is the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pages of transcripts and documents and reports and investigative material. And you can't possibly see all of it. Their staff prepared synopsis of it for them. But now that they've issued their report, some of it's coming out, and some of it I had not seen before. I'm going to give you a couple of examples. You remember that Donald Trump made a call to Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State in Georgia, and said, and Raffensperger taped the conversation, fortunately. That's permissible in Georgia. It's what's called a one-party consent state. Wisconsin's a one-party consent state. But traditionally, some states were two-party consents. Illinois and Pennsylvania used to be. I don't know if they are now. What that means is it's illegal to tape a telephone call unless both parties to the call agree. But in Georgia and Wisconsin, it's legal to tape a telephone call if only one party agrees, and that's you if you're the one that wants to tape it and you're on the call. There are two little caveats to that, just so you know. One of them is it has been a violation of the telephone company tariff. You know, if you did that in an organization, you know, you run the risk of not having a telephone, although now with the proliferation of providers, that's a very small risk. The second thing is lawyers can't do it. A lawyer is prohibited by the rules of professional conduct from taping a telephone call if only one party consents. So there you have it, the call that Brad Raffensperger taped from Trump. He was doing it in his capacity as Secretary of State. It was lawful. And in it, Trump said, hey, I only need a couple of votes, 11,000, forget how many, 590, one more vote because I won Georgia.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
Thank you, Evan. That's great. There you have it. There you have it. Smoking gun. Well, Brad Raffensperger fleshed that out a little bit in his transcript when he talked to the January 6th commission. Brad Raffensperger said that he took that call as a threat and that Trump later in the call implied, in fact, flat out suggested that Raffensperger had broken the law and had criminal exposure. Criminal exposure. Now, that threatening somebody with criminal prosecution, either impliedly or directly, is itself an offense. If a lawyer does it, it's a violation of the rules of professional conduct, but it's extortion. That's a crime. I had never heard before that Raffensperger told people that or took that position. Obviously, anybody with an ounce of sense will look at that exchange and go, if the president of the United States calls me and says, I may have broken the criminal law, but I can clean myself by coughing up 11,000 some odd votes, that is a threat. But here he reaffirmed it to him. And if there's a criminal trial of Trump, he'll be required under oath to repeat that to a jury. Very significant development. Another significant development that I had never, ever seen before. You know, when Cassidy Hutchinson testified, I thought she was magnificent. She got up there and testified about the events on January 6th, what Trump did, what he said, what Mark Meadows did, what he said. And no holds barred. She said She told the January 6th commission that in her initial testimony, they had provided her with counsel who told her to not remember things, which is frankly unethical. But she got her own lawyer, and of course it was expensive, and then she just flat out told the truth. And their reasons for questioning her in public, I think, among other things, besides having that terrific testimony, were to plant in people's minds that other people who testified and said they couldn't remember anything had had their testimony cooked up by unethical lawyers coming from the Trump administration. But anyway, I thought she was magnificent. What did not come out in that interrogation of her by the committee back earlier in the year is that she also told them in a transcript that about a dozen, she said routinely, maybe a dozen times, once or twice a week between December of 2020 and January of 2021, I saw Mark Meadows burning documents in his fireplace, the fireplace of his office. Now, wait a minute. The chief of staff to the president of the United States is in his office routinely about a dozen times, once or twice a week between December 20 and January 21, burning documents. What documents? Many documents are required by law to be kept and turned over to the National Archives. And normally people only burn documents if they are incriminating. And I mean criminally incriminating. That's what incriminating means. There was a crooked governor of Louisiana named Edward Edwards. He ended up spending time in prison for bribery. He was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. But he had a very famous saying. He would say the following, quote, "Don't say it if you can write it, and don't write it if you cannot. Don't say it if you can write it, don't write it if you cannot." And they did not succeed in getting him on some charges because what he would apparently do, somebody would come into his office and would say, "How much do I have to pay you for you to make sure that the gambling bill passes?" And he wouldn't say anything. He would hold up a piece of paper that would say $1 million. Then he put it in the fireplace. And that was the end of the conversation. And they could never prove because they didn't have anybody who heard him say it. And the crooks that would say he held up a piece of paper and burned it weren't very credible. So there you have it. Didn't matter if you wired somebody when he went in to talk to Edward Edwards, because all he would do is hold up a piece of paper, burn it or not. Now, come on. We're talking the White House here. We're talking Mark Meadows. Mark Meadows was a congressman from North Carolina. He's tapped to be the chief of staff. There is an abbreviation in the government, you know, POTUS, is a reference to President of the United States, FLOTUS, First Lady of the United States, SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States. And there's a similar thing for the Chief of Staff to the President. It's a very, very big deal. It's a very big deal position. He controls access to the President. If somebody wants to see the President, they have to go through Mark Meadows. He's burning documents during the period of December 20 to January 21. Why December 20? December 20 was when they hatched the plot. They hatched the plot for January 6th. They hatched the plot for the fake electors. They hatched the plot for the Green Bay sweep to go in and force the election back into the House of Representatives, where, as you know, we've talked about this before, just because Nancy Pelosi's party, the Democrats, ran the House doesn't mean that they would again then get to pick the president. The Constitution says there's a dispute over the electors. It goes to the House of Representatives, not the Senate. And every state gets one vote. California gets one vote with 56 congressmen. New York gets one vote with 40 some odd congressmen. And Wyoming gets one vote with one congressman. You see what I mean? And there's a majority of states that have Republican majorities in their congressional delegation. We're going quick to the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Always a great show. Always learn a lot. Trump is complete and utter garbage. I don't know what more I can say. I think the worst is yet to come. Classified and top secret documents taken out of the White House. Who knows who he sold them to? Because the man can't be trusted with anything. And the last thing I want to say today is Joe Biden, the greatest president in my lifetime up to this point, and he brought us back from the brink. So I hope he runs again. So thanks for your show, Matt. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for your terrific calls, Paul. I agree with you 100%. You know, Joe has been underestimated his entire life. He comes out of school. He was on the county council in Delaware. That's all he was. He was like a county supervisor. Think of a Dane County supervisor, Milwaukee County supervisor. He runs for the U.S. Senate. He runs for the U.S. Senate. Everybody goes, he's 29 years old. You got to be 30 under the Constitution. He says, well, I'm 30 in December. I don't get sworn in until January if I win. He's running against an iconic Republican. He wins, and he spends the next 50 years either in the Senate or as vice president or preparing to run for the presidency. And he's a nice guy. And everybody goes, oh, well, he's just a nice guy. Well, no, he's not just a nice guy. He is a nice guy, but he is an excellent leader, and there's nothing like experience. He knows the Senate better than anybody in the history of the United States. He's the vice president, basically breaks the ties and is the head of the Senate. So for 50 years, he's doing this. He knows it like nobody else. And he pushed through infrastructure, hard and soft infrastructure, the chip bill. I mean, he pushed through so many things. And he did it seemingly effortlessly. So I'm with you, Paul. I hope he runs again. I think Trump's running, and Trump could be the nominee. It may be that only Joe Biden can beat him again, and we need Joe Biden running for president. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Andy of Beaver Dam, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Andy?
Well, Matt, a happy new year to you, first of all. I agree with
you. Happy new year to you, Andy.
Yes, I agree with you and Paul that Biden, I actually underestimated him a little bit in 2020, but this guy has turned out, you know, to get a lot of things ironed out that Trump did and everything. And so I think that it's the greatest thing. I mean, we avoided a disaster. I'm wondering if you looked in the Matt Flynn crystal eight ball and you look at what's happening with the Congress, that one guy, he lied about his education. They're speculating he might get knocked out or something, who knows. But if you were to look in your crystal ball, and Biden is in St. Croix right now, probably trying to decide what he should do, you know, his future is going to be after 24. But let's just take care of 23. If you look at what's going on, what would you venture to say things are going to be different? No more Nancy Pelosi. We got that Kevin, or what's his name, the guy, Kevin McCarthy. What is the pathway for Biden and the majority in the Senate to get muddled through all these crazy people that we have in the Congress right now? What would be your intuition and speculation as to how they're going to be able to navigate that?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. That's excellent questions. And here's my take on it. Nancy Pelosi is not going to be the speaker anymore, and she's not going to be the minority leader. The new minority leader is Hakeem Jeffries of New York. He's a good guy, but has nowhere near her experience. She was elected to the Congress in the 80s, and she has been the leader of the party for about 20 years. Now, Joe Biden has been in the Senate or vice president or running for president for 50 years. So, and I'll tell you something, everybody out there. If you need surgery, you want a person who's done 1,000 of the surgeries, not a newbie, and not a person who's only done one or two of them. You want experience, and you have that with Joe Biden. You had it with Nancy Pelosi. Hakeem Jeffries, good guy, smart guy, does not have the experience, but he'll learn. He'll learn real quick. Now, what do I think? We have split government. We have 51 Democratic seats, or two independents, by the way, Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, but they caucus with the Democrats, so I'm going to say there's 51 Democrats, 49 Republicans. We got that knocked at least for two more years. Now, in the House, the Republicans now have 222 seats. It takes 218 votes to pass anything, and it takes 218 votes, for instance, if Kevin McCarthy wants to be speaker, to make him speaker. If he loses four Republicans, he can still be speaker. He'd have 218 votes. If he loses five Republicans, he won't be speaker. And there are five Republicans who have taken an oath never to vote for him because he's so bad. He's so weak and dishonest and slippery and strange. They themselves are pieces of work. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz, and talk about slippery, strange, and pieces of work, but it takes one to know them. So what happens? They are going to go, and there'll be a vote. Everybody gets sworn in first week in January, and they're going to take a vote. And the Democrats will put up Hakeem Jeffries. But unfortunately, we only have 213 votes, so he'll get 213 votes. You'd think normally the minority leader, now in the majority, Kevin McCarthy, would get 222 votes. He will not. He will not. I think they're going to stop him on that first ballot. They will stop him on the first ballot. He may get 217 votes. He may get fewer than that. He may get fewer than that. In fact, there is some sentiment that I've been picking up in the Republican Party that, especially over this break, it's basically a two-week break, that he's losing votes. People look at the guy and say, hey, wait a minute, he's not all that popular. We've got to come up with someone else. They're starting to talk about Tom Cole, who's a guy from Oklahoma, kind of a low-key guy. I don't know much about him. He's a Indigenous. He's an Indian. He's a member of the Chickasaw Nation and would be the first Indigenous person to be speaker. He's a Republican. I'm sure conservative. I have no idea how he's voted. I haven't bothered to look it up because he's not speaker yet. However, Andy Biggs of Arizona hates McCarthy so much, he's actually going to try to stick his name in opposition. And this kind of thing hadn't really happened since the 19th century. In other words, some party has a majority and they can't agree on who their leader is. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Some Democrats will say, will try to approach about five Republicans and say, okay, vote for Hakeem Jeffries and give him 218, and we'll have a Democratic speaker, even though we have a Republican majority. It's a mess. I don't think that's going to happen. I personally think that there's a good chance that the Republicans are going to end up with a speaker other than Kevin McCarthy, because he's weak and strange, and he has no spine. And frankly, he has a dull look to him. I'll tell you what. On January 6th, he called Trump, said, you got to do something. Call these guys off. He did the right thing then. Trump goes, well, Kevin, apparently they think more of their country than you do. Yeah, and yeah. Kevin McCarthy gets up on the, you can see this on YouTube. He gives a speech blasting Trump. So we know this is the end of Trump. We know that he did it. Then he reads the polls. He gets scared. He goes down and kneels and genuflex in front of Trump and kisses his ring. This guy has no principles, none whatsoever. And so it'll be funny if he's actually being beaten by the Trump wing, who doesn't, who don't, I mean, you know, frankly, he should be beaten by everybody. However, you ask my opinion, what's going to happen? I think if they end up with a guy like Tom Cole, a little more reasonable, a little more sensible, sit down with Hakeem Jeffries, sit down with Schumer and Mitch McConnell, work out something on the debt ceiling and so forth. Fingers crossed. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Well, one of our callers had mentioned a guy, fellow in New York, who's had a lot of problems, George Santos. Got to tell you something about him, and this is very pathetic for Kevin McCarthy. George Santos was just elected in the Staten Island, Queens area. By the way, I see everybody on the line. I will get to you right away, but I just want to get this in. This is amazing. This guy Santos, the Democratic Party in New York, by the way, their leadership should resign for not doing opposition research on this guy. George Santos, guy originally from Brazil, claimed that he'd worked for Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, that he had a degree from a certain college, that he does this, he did that, and he had his own company. All of that was false. But in addition to that, they searched down in Brazil, and the police were investigating. His mother was taking care of an old guy who had a checkbook, and apparently checks were written on the checkbook for a lot of money. And Santos denies he took it, but apparently there's been no resolution of it. How did this guy get into Congress? Well, guess who's sticking up for him, even though there's a bipartisan call for him to resign for being a liar and running a fraudulent campaign? Bipartisan. Kevin McCarthy, because he's going to vote for McCarthy. And McCarthy can't lose five votes. He already has five people say they'll never vote for him. He's losing others. So this guy's a political cadaver. He's a corpse. They're going to carry him in, put some smelling salts under his nose politically, vote for McCarthy, ship him out, and he'll be out of Congress. Unbelievable. Going to the lines, Gene of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Gene?
Well, the liars line up in the Republican Party, the party of liars and sleaze bags. I'm sorry to use that word, but they're sleazy. Kevin McCarthy is sleazy. What in the world do we have a sleazy used car salesman? I shouldn't be negative on, I love used cars, that's the only thing I buy. But a sleazy salesman that only thinks about himself, I mean, he is like, ooh, you know what I mean? I can't even think of the kind of animal or reptile that he is. And it's really, you know, and the, you know, they say children and kids, adolescents, huge, significant rise in depression. Well, you know, kids are taught to tell the truth. Kids are taught that adults act adult-like and have honesty and integrity. That's what we teach our children to do. And then they see all these slime bags up there leading our country. Well, no wonder they're getting depressed. They don't know what way to turn. And it's parents need to wake up and choose good leaders, because what they do is going to impact all the children of our country. And they need to wake up, because this isn't a game. They make it like a game. It's a game show. Who can be the oddest or most provoked, and the things that they say, the lies they spew. Marjorie Taylor Greene, excuse me, this stuff just is unbelievable to me, Matt. I just get like, oh, and then that guy that lied. You know what? If anybody went in for a job interview, now, I guess maybe people don't think, you know, a congressman's really that important, so we'll take anybody. If they lied to us, that's okay. They could be a bank robber. They can have buddies with Russia. Oh, that's okay. We'll vote for them. We don't care. You know, they do a good show. And, you know, and the rest of us are sitting there suffering because we really know what government's all about. If they want a show, why don't they have their own studio and they can be on TV all the time producing all kinds of entertainment for those who like that kind of thing. And we can elect people who are serious about the lives and the people in our country.
Right.
I mean, this is just unbelievable, Matt. Anyway, I didn't mean to go on and on. Thanks, Matt.
That's good stuff, Jeannie. No, you're right. And, you know, people, they've gotten so jaded, so jaundiced. They go, oh, well, he's in politics. Of course, he's going to lie about this or that. But where, you know, the New York Times came out with the article after he'd been elected and he's about to be sworn in. Why did it take so long? There's a thing called opposition research. The Democratic Party in the state of New York and the National Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee should do opposition research. You don't take this guy for granted. He said he worked for Citigroup and Goldman Sachs, and that's why he knows about money. Hey, guy, drop a dime. How about calling them up and see if he ever did? He said he graduated from this college. Well, no, he didn't. They never heard of him. It's not that these people said, well, he had a lower position. They never heard of him. He's a mystery man. He's a mystery man. And then down in Brazil, they go, oh, his mother took care of this old guy who had a checkbook, and suddenly checks got written, and suddenly this Santos, George Santos, loaned himself something. Well, first of all, he loaned hundreds of thousands of dollars to his own campaign. Where'd he get it? Where'd he work? Number two, he got income from some investment of his for $700,000 in a year. What investment? What investment? This guy's a mystery man. So he blows into Staten Island and Queens. You know, Staten Island and Queens are boroughs of New York City. This seat had been held by Thomas Suozzi, a Democrat, who ran for governor against Kathy Hochul, lost in the primary. And we put up a very good candidate. And of course, with all this stuff on campaign on crime and that kind of thing, this guy Santos gets in there. What, nobody looks at the guy? I mean, nobody, what, cares? I mean, no, nobody makes a phone call? That's flat-out malpractice, and it was wrong. But the thing that's really disturbing is Kevin McCarthy is keeping him on life supports to vote for him for speaker because he can't lose five votes. He can lose four votes. And five people have already said they can't stand him and won't vote for him. And others are drifting away. He's desperate. So he sees this guy, wounded guy, who frankly, you know, the Congress should expel him. And frankly, I think Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York State, is looking at the guy, because if you say you went to a certain college and you didn't, okay, I mean, some of them do that, it ain't great. You say you work for this company, but the totality of what he did, and where did the $700,000 of income come from, and where did the money that he lent himself come from? Letitia James is on the case. Holmes is on the case. Okay, I want to turn to one other thing, a disturbing thing, and I think, quite frankly, this has got to be called out. Hamline University, St. Paul, Minnesota, had a professor who taught some sort of art history course on Zoom, and he would put up paintings, and he put up two historical paintings of the Prophet Muhammad. One of them from the 1300s, that's the 14th century. That's a medieval painting that's 700 years old, and the other one from the 1500s, that's a Renaissance painting. What's that, about 500 years old? Some Muslim students complained. They said that's forbidden by their faith, and the dean of student apologized, said it was undeniably inconsiderate, disrespectful, and Islamophobic, fired the guy, and then investigated him for hate crime. Where'd he go to prison? They determined it was not a hate crime, but it was inconsiderate, disrespectful, and Islamophobic. And that is what happened. Well, let me tell you what I think should have happened. The professor should be reinstated. The dean should be fired for doing it. And the students that complained should have their visas yanked and sent back to their country of origin. Our First Amendment is under attack. And let me be very blunt about that. It's under attack by the left and the right. It's under attack. If you read the First Amendment, it is the most beautiful statement of political theory in the history of mankind. There's many, many different things. No established religion. Unheard of. Unheard of in the history of mankind. freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom to petition the government. And let me tell you something else. If an evil day ever came and we lost the whole Constitution, but we kept the First Amendment, the rest of the Constitution would grow back because of no established religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom to petition the government. But if an evil day ever came where we lost the First Amendment and had the rest of the Constitution in place, the rest of the Constitution would wither and die in a generation. There are plenty of countries in this world who copied our Constitution in every respect except the First Amendment. And they are authoritarian states. They are oligarch states. They're mafia states. You cannot have a doctrine from jihadist cultures that comes in and attacks the First Amendment this way. The professor had a perfect right to show a medieval and a Renaissance painting to an art history class. Perfect right to do it. The students had a perfect right to see it. If somebody is going to be offended, they should be able to opt out of seeing it and with no consequence. But to fire him and investigate him for a hate crime is too far. The dean should be fired, professor reinstated, those students, visas yanked, sent back to their place of origin. And frankly, in the history of the world, going back 1,300 years, the 7th century, Islam was founded in the early 600s. By the 690s, they'd invaded Iberia, the Iberian Peninsula, Portugal, and Spain. Went into France, 732, Battle of Tours-Poitiers. Charlemagne's grandfather, Charles Martel, you've heard of him, Charles the Hammer? Fielded an army and beat them back, otherwise France would be an Islamic state. And this went on for 1,300 years. It goes on today. There's still occupation and obviously Kosovo and that area. And enough's enough. The United States cannot tolerate this kind of incursion and threat to the First Amendment. And we already have had plenty of incidents. Obviously, we've had 9/11, the Boston Marathon, San Bernardino, Orlando, Fort Hood, Chattanooga, Chelsea, Ohio State, Manhattan bike path murders. Enough's enough. We need a jihad-free America and a communist-free America. And the Republican flirtation with Russia, Tucker Carlson, all these kinds of people, betraying the United States, and the far-left flirtation under multiculturalism with bringing people in for threatening the First Amendment is wrong, too. All of this has to be said, and it was just said. By the way, there is a campaign, and you must be aware of this. Some airlines are petitioning the FCC to drop the rule that commercial airlines need at least two pilots. They only want one pilot for some flights. Very bad idea. I would not get on a commercial plane with one pilot. There have been instances, not many, but they exist, of pilots dying in flight. I'm not kidding. Having heart attacks, having strokes in flight. And this is a cost-benefit analysis. Okay, maybe once every 12 years a plane goes down and okay, but the cost-benefit, no, baloney, the heck with the cost-benefit. If I'm on that plane, that isn't cost-benefit, that's my death. And if one of your loved ones, husband, wife, father, mother, son, daughter, brother, sister, friend, unacceptable. You need at least two pilots on every commercial flight. You cannot take the risk. You cannot take the risk that there is going to be an incident in the cockpit and they're not going to be able to land the plane. And frankly, when you're flying a private plane, and frequently there is only one pilot, and I've got to say I've done it myself. I'm not a pilot, but gone along on it when I was younger. I would not fly with one pilot in any kind of plane. There have been very few instances, but there have been instances where you have passengers screaming into the radio, trying to be talked, teach me how to land this thing. There have been occasional examples where they have successfully had a passenger land it. But by far, those are very, very rare. So keep that in mind. I don't think it's going anywhere. I'm amazed that any airline had the audacity to propose that to the FCC. But if you are getting on a flight with one pilot, you're out of your mind, and especially a commercial flight or any flight, quite frankly. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I don't know if you picked up on Donald Trump's Merry Christmas message. It's very, very common for office holders and then very senior people in both parties to put out a Christmas message and a Thanksgiving message and a 4th of July message and every kind of message. And I think that's great. Why not do it? Normally, Merry Christmas messages are to have a Merry Christmas, have happy holidays. People of all faiths, have a happy holiday season. And by the way, Merry Christmas. It's very, very simple. Not simple with Donald Trump. I'm going to read you his message, a chunk of his message. And I'm not kidding. This is what it is. Quote, Donald Trump, his Merry Christmas message to the United States, the people of the United States. Quote, Merry Christmas, everyone, including the radical left Marxists, who are trying to destroy our country, the FBI that is illegal, coercing, and paying social and lamestream media to push for a mentally disabled Democrat, i.e. Joe Biden, over the brilliant, clairvoyant, and USA-loving Donald J. Trump. Now, that is as paranoid and strange as anything I've ever heard. The fact that, forget the fact that he linked it to Christmas. I mean, who says something like that? A former president? I'll say it again. Quote, Merry Christmas. This is from Donald Trump, his Christmas message to the U.S. Quote, Merry Christmas, everyone, including the radical left Marxists that are trying to destroy our country, the FBI that is illegally coercing and paying social and lamestream media, lamestream media, to push for a mentally disabled Democrat over the brilliant, clairvoyant, and USA-loving Donald J. Trump. Well, first of all, forget what he thinks about being brilliant. Clairvoyant, he would have foreseen he was going to lose in 2020 if he was clairvoyant. And what do you mean USA-loving? Are you out of your mind, USA-loving? The guy was a graft dodger during the Vietnam War in 1968. He said he had bone spurs. He faked it. He faked it. You know, this guy... And, you know, the thing is, there's one other president in the history of the United States who had an interrupted term, Grover Cleveland, Democrat from New York. He was elected from, believe it or not, Buffalo, New York, like Kathy Hochul. He was elected president, and he served one term, defeated, and he came back again, and he had an interrupted service. He served another term. Now, the thing about Grover Cleveland, the rap on him was that he had sired a child out of wedlock, which back, you know, in the late 19th century was more remarkable than it is now. And his opponents would show up at his rallies and go, Ma, Ma, where's Pa? And everybody laugh and everything. Grover Cleveland won the second time, and his supporters would shout, Gone to the White House, ha, ha, ha. So that was 19th century, all right? But nobody in his right mind who wants to be president a second time puts out a statement like that, puts out a statement saying, quote, Merry Christmas, everyone, including the radical left Marxists who are trying to destroy our country, the FBI that is illegally coercing and paying social and lamestream media to push for a mentally disabled Democrat over the brilliant, clairvoyant, and USA-loving Donald Trump. That is a mentally ill thing to do in and of itself. This guy shouldn't come close to the presidency. Again, we're going to the lines. Bill of Oconomowoc, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Bill?
Oh, nothing says Merry Christmas like Donald Trump, right? But if you think Dan Looney Tune is something, just wait till the first of the year, and Looney Tune cartoons is going to start off with Kevin McCarthy. Just be prepared for the craziness that's about to happen. But I'm kind of welcoming it because I think that'll be the beginning of the end for them completely. I really do. I think America's waking up. I think they, don't snow a snowman. They're done. They're not going to put up with this anymore. So these characters, these loons, they can come on. They can, you know, do their dance, whatever. But America's laughing at them, and they don't want them around. So be prepared, though, like I say, after the first of the year. Get it by January 5th. I can't wait. Congress. I just can't.
Yeah, Bill, that's some good comments. But let me tell you something. There's an old saying that, you know, a year in politics is like 1,000 years in regular time. Things change so quickly, so quickly. I agree with you on your predictions for the week after New Year's. The Congress gets sworn in. They get sworn in. They're milling around. There's 435 people. They go, all right, who's going to lead it? Who's going to be speaker? Historically, what happens is the majority party elects its leader, and that's it. You know, Nancy Pelosi got elected by the Democrats. Kevin McCarthy is the minority leader right now, elected by the Republicans. Normally, they'd stick him up, and they go, we want him. And the Democrats would say, we want Hakeem Jeffries. And Hakeem Jeffries would get 213 votes, and Kevin McCarthy would get 222 votes. There are 435 people in the House of Representatives, and that would be that. That ain't going to be that, as you accurately point out. That ain't going to be that. Five Republicans have said there's no way in hell that I will vote for Kevin McCarthy. That means he's going to get maximum 217 votes. He needs 218. That's why he's pushing for this corrupt George Santos, this lying George Santos, this guy that just got elected, man of mystery from Brazil. How did this guy get elected? All right. How did this guy get elected? Where's the Oppo research? All right. I'm going to stop dwelling on that. But anyway, he's going to vote for McCarthy. McCarthy wants to drag him over the finish line. Then there'll be another ballot for it. And they'll be horse trading. And the Democrats will go, all right, give us a few Republican votes, make Hakeem Jeffries the speaker, and we'll do what? I don't know. And no, that's not going to work. I don't think that's going to work at all. I think the Republicans have to go to an alternative. But the Republican Party is split right down the middle. There's a civil war going on in the Republican Party. Right now, Lauren Boebert attacked Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she attacked Lauren Boebert, because Marjorie Taylor Greene supports McCarthy and Lauren Boebert doesn't. And there was a key supporter of Trump and Boebert who has attacked Marjorie Taylor Greene. Here's what he called her, just called her. He's the head of the Stop the Steal movement, and Andy Biggs of Arizona the same way. They go, Marjorie Taylor Greene is now attacking Lauren Boebert like a trailer park hood rat. That's what they said. Now, you say things like that in politics, that stings. People are not going to like that. There's a civil war going on. I agree with Bill of Oconomowoc, and I think stand by for heavy rolls, as we said in the Navy. And we didn't mean coming out of the oven for breakfast either. Heavy rolls, you were taking green water over the forecastle, you got battened down. That's what's going to happen with the Republican Party. I don't know who they're going to get. I think they're going to get Tom Cole of Oklahoma. But I'm not a Republican, and I don't know that for sure. We're going into the show. Great callers, as always. Evan did a great job producing, as he does on Wednesdays, Calvin on the other days. Matt Flynn Direct, back same time, same place tomorrow. Signing off for today.